This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Many people have canceled travel plans, but not film director Jules Dassin. Although he's 90 years old, last week he made good on his promise to come to New York for a film retrospective produced by the Film Forum in downtown Manhattan, featuring the work of his late wife, the actress Melina Mercouri. Dassin directed her in the films Never on Sunday and Topkapi. He lives in Greece. He's lived abroad ever since he was blacklisted in the 1950s. While living in France, he made the classic film Rififi. In the 40s, before he was blacklisted, he made Brute Force, Night in the City, and The Naked City. The Naked City was one of the first films shot on location in Manhattan, and it's particularly interesting to watch it now in the light of the World Trade Center attacks. The opening sequence features terrific aerial shots of Manhattan while we hear this voiceover.
Ladies and gentlemen, the motion picture you are about to see is called The Naked City. My name is Mark Hellinger. I was in charge of its production. And I may as well tell you frankly that it's a bit different from most films you've ever seen. It was written by Albert Maltz and Malvin Wall, photographed by William Daniels, and directed by Jules Dassin. As you see, we're flying over an island, a city, a particular city. And this is a story of a number of people, and a story also of the city itself. It was not photographed in a studio. Quite the contrary. Barry Fitzgerald, our star, Howard Duff, Dorothy Hart, Don Taylor, Ted DeCorsia, and the other actors played out their roles on the streets, in the apartment houses, in the skyscrapers of New York itself. And along with them, a great many thousand New Yorkers played out their roles also. This is the city as it is. Hot summer pavements, the children at play, the buildings in their naked stone, the people without makeup. Well, let's begin our story this way. It's 1 o'clock in the morning on a hot summer night.
Last week, I asked director Jules Dassin why, at the age of 90, he came to New York for the Melina Mercouri retrospective in spite of the World Trade Center attack.
As soon as I heard about it, I had great need to be here. And my daughters, I live in Athens, my daughters live in Paris, and I said, I'm going. And they said, not without us. And all three of us reserved, booked flights, and came.
I want to talk a little bit about your 1948 movie, Naked City, which I believe was the first movie shot on location in New York.
No, it was not the first.
Not the first?
But I think maybe the first all of it, both interiors and exteriors in New York.
Now, in the opening, there are great scenes of Manhattan. Some of those shots seem to be shot from above, maybe from a helicopter.
From a little plane.
From a little plane.
Yeah.
Can you tell us the feeling of it?
Well, I tell you, I was raised in New York from the time I was 3 till I went to live in California for a while. And it's my city, it's my town, and I love it. This is the New York that I thought, and isn't it interesting, I thought I knew New York. But you learn a city when you're really going to film it and you have to walk it all. And you find out all the secrets of how a city is fed and how the dead are buried in the hospital systems and all the things that the organizational life of a city, the simplicity of the planning. When I was much younger, I was very unhappy that streets were calling First Street, Second, Third, and Fourth, whereas in Europe you had Mozart Avenue and Beethoven Alley and so on. But here, I didn't find any poetry in the numbers. But then understanding that grid system, I thought it was just brilliant planning.
Did shooting The Naked City make you feel even more attached to Manhattan than you'd felt before?
Yes. Yes. Because there was this passionate interest that sometimes became huge problems, because the camera and actors attract people, and we had to use all kinds of techniques to hide the camera. I had a portable newspaper kiosk with me. I put the camera inside. I had a flower delivery van with a mirror that looks out. And most of all, I had a marvelous actor guy who, when the crowd would gather, and they learned before, when we came to shooting place, the crowds were already there. They had checked with hotels or who, where actors were, and they knew where we would be. And sometimes I would turn up and there'd be hundreds of people, literally. And this actor friend was very important to us because about a few blocks away, we would set up a ladder. He would get up on the ladder, wave an American flag, and begin to agitate. And people would rush to him, and I'd get my shots quickly and get out.
That's really funny. So you had an actor who was a decoy.
That's right.
And you were able to shoot undercover because you were hidden this portable kiosk or in the flower truck.
And such situations, there was no place to hide the camera. That's when we used our public speaker.
That's really great.
Yes.
Film director and actor Jules Dassin is my guest. A few years after you made Naked City, you were blacklisted. How did you know that you were blacklisted?
I think I read it in a newspaper. I had been invited to come to make a film in Italy, and I didn't work out. We agreed to disagree. And while I was in Rome, I decided I would go to the Cannes Film Festival. And when I was there, I learned that I had been enlisted into this noble brigade of refugees and subversive characters.
And what did you decide to do?
I decided to go right back to the U.S. states. But I was waiting to be called, and was not for a while. And then I was engaged to, because New York did not admit a blacklist. The theater would not be intimidated. And I was engaged to direct, of all things, a musical revue starring Betty Davis. And I always couldn't understand why she wanted to do that. But she did. And I said, fine, because it was a job. And went into rehearsal. And only after rehearsals had maybe, I think we'd gone to about 2 weeks or so, a fellow turned up with the, what do you call it, a subpoena to come to Washington to testify. And I was very frustrated because I said, well, I can't go now. I have the responsibility of this play. They'll have to wait. And they'll have to wait for quite a time, because we're going to take it out of town, you know, as you try these plays before you bring them to New York. And this guy who served these subpoenas became a buddy. He came to these different cities and said, hey. He would call me Julie. As a matter of, hey, Julie, you're in trouble. You better go. And I said, I will not discharge. I have this responsibility, and I'm going to finish. And I'll be in Washington the very next day. And a day or two before we opened in New York, there's a telegram that came signed, and they said, these hearings have been indefinitely postponed. So I never got to make my heroic speech. Frustration.
My guest is film director Jules Dassin. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is film director Jules Dassin. He directed Night in the City, Brute Force, Rafifi, Top Cappy, and Never on Sunday. He was blacklisted a few years after he made the 1948 film, The Naked City. You ended up making your next movie in France. Had it become impossible to work in the United States?
It became impossible because I knew once I was named as a subversive, and that I understood the blacklist had had by that time been well entrenched. There was no work, and people avoided you. Friends would pretend they didn't see you, and I had a family to feed. And I was offered a film in France, a film with the actor, their great comic actor's name is Fernandel. And I grabbed it, leaped at it. A few days before, no, about a week before, we were to shoot, the actress whom we had hired, an American actress, came weeping, said, "I have been told if I work with Mr. Dassin, I will never get a job in America again. And so I'm obliged to leave. Excuse me, I'm out." And this gave the producer a little bit of shock. But I said, well, we can cast that again. We began to do that. And then he got another message from a man whose name I'll tell you, know his name, I'll never forget it. Mr. Roy Brewer, who was the president of the Technicians Union in California. And his message to the producer was that if you make this film with Mr. Dassin, it will never see a release in the States, nor will any film you ever make from then on be released in the States. And they took this threat seriously, and I was out of a job. And that went on for about 4 years until Rififi came up.
And Rififi is just a brilliant, now classic, heist movie. And let me read something Francois Truffaut said about it. He said, "Out of the worst crime novel I have ever read, Jules Dassin has made the best film noir I have ever seen." Were you skeptical of making the novel into a movie? Did you dislike the novel as much as Truffaut did?
I was not enchanted by it. But it was a job.
You wanted to work.
And there was just this section of in the novel, which was about a heist, a robbery. And I decided to make the film, build it around that. So all of the themes, ideas, and some racist notions in the book, I did not have to face. As a matter of fact, I became friends with the writer, the author of the book later on. But it was so glorious and wonderful to work again after 5 years.
So, I guess the exhilaration of working again is part of what we're seeing in the movie.
I hope so. I would be glad if that were true.
The most famous scene in Rififi is the actual jewelry heist. This is a scene of close to 30 minutes. There's no dialogue and there's no music.
No.
As these guys work without making a sound.
That's right.
Why did you shoot it without dialogue or music?
I just felt it that way, and I think it came from my trust in the characters as written and as played. They had no need to talk or communicate. They were professionals. They knew each other. They anticipated each other, and they knew that noise was an enemy. Noise was dangerous, and they worked quietly, efficiently, and in touch with each other. Contact that was very strong. And it worked better in the silence.
Now, most filmmakers, I think, would have put music underneath, suspense music or some kind of music.
Oh, I think then you've heard my story. A story. There's a wonderful composer in French history, as a matter of fact. His name is Georges Auric, who also did film work. He's written some marvelous stuff for movies. And he said, "I look forward to writing music for this huge sequence." And I said, "No, I don't want music." He said, "You're mad. You're mad." And the producer said, "You're mad. You're going to go 30 minutes without dialogue, without music?" I said, "That's what I hope." And he said, "Look, I'm your friend. I'm going to cover you. I'm going to write the music." I said, "I don't want it. I'm going to write it." And he did. Almost a symphony. And this wonderful guy, I invited him. I said, "Come to screening. I'm going to show you the film once with music and once without music. And I want you to tell me what you think I should do." And he sat through both versions and he said, "Music out." Wonderful guy.
Now, do you think that audiences early on realized that there was no sound and dialogue? Or did it just work on them unconsciously?
Well, I trapped them a little bit, because there was one sound I did make. The guy accidentally touches a piano key. And when I saw that with an audience and they gasped when he made that sound, I said, "Okay, we're in." They don't want him to make any noise.
If you're just joining us, my guest is film director and actor Jules Dassin. I'm going to quote François Truffaut. He wrote, "The relative permissiveness of the French censors allowed Dassin to make a film without compromises, immoral perhaps, but profoundly tragic, warm, human." Now, I think one of the immoral, quote, parts that he's referring to is a scene in which the main character, Le Stéphanois, played by Jean Servais, has just gotten out of prison, and he discovers that his old girlfriend is now with his enemy. So he punishes her by forcing her to strip, then whipping her with a belt, and throwing her out the door before she can zip her dress back up. We never see her undressed, nor do we see him actually whip her, we just hear it. And we also see how disgusted he is by his own act when he's through whipping her. How did you decide how to shoot that scene?
Well, may I correct one thing?
Yeah.
He did not come to punish an enemy. He didn't even know who the man was. When he went to prison, this woman, very, very sympathetic character, as a matter of fact, just had to take up another life. And Servais, the character who was prison, I thought, felt, as did the actor, that he behaved cruelly. But that's the way that he would behave. And it was, the cruelty was suggested more than seen.
Right.
As a matter of fact, not a single scratch or blow was filmed. It was suggested.
But I understand that the movie ended up on the Legion of Decency list of movies to avoid, and that it was actually censored in some countries.
Look, the Legion of Decency, I'm convinced, treated it that way because my name was on the film.
Right.
Something I have some pride about was that after people who needed work, friends, blacklisted people, talent people that I knew about, had to work under false names. And I just, when Rififi was seen by American distributors, it had already opened in Europe and was very successful, made a lot of money. And producers of the States, distributors, came to me and offered me a lot of money if I would remove my name from the film and put up some false name. That I refused. And that was the first film made by a former blacklistee that had the director's name on it. This is credited to my dear friend Dalton Trumbo, who made Spartacus.
Right, that's the story I always hear.
No, but that came after Rififi, considerably later. And with my name on it, all we got at the beginning was one theater in New York. One. But it opened and was very successful, and so some other theaters took it up. But it got very limited distribution at the time.
I know you acted in the Yiddish theater in New York before you even directed. What kinds of parts did you play in the Yiddish theater?
I actually played one speaking part, because I was an apprentice in that theater. And I played the lead in one part because I was the understudy. And I stepped in and I was great. And then the next day, I was terrible. And the third day, I was just inadmissible. And I said, oh, my God, you mean one has to do this every night? I said, no more actors for me. And that's when I decided to go in another direction.
Was Yiddish your first language?
Well, actually, it's very strange. My mother and father were Jewish, but my father insisted that we speak in English. And so I didn't. I spoke sub-Yiddish, but not well. But when I saw that theater and said, I want to be in this theater, because I think it was a great theater called the Artef, marvelous, wonderful theater with a brilliant director, a man whose name is Benno Schneider. And I said, oh, I was a boy, I was very young, but I said, I want to be part of this theater. And part of it was studying Yiddish.
Oh.
And I spent almost five, 6 years in that theater. Happy, happy time.
My guest is film director Jules Dassin. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is film director Jules Dassin. Now, Jules Dassin, you two of your best-known movies, Never on Sunday and Top Cappy, starred Melina Mercouri, who also you were married to for many years. She passed away in 1994. And she became Minister of Culture in Greece, but before that had happened, she was exiled for several years after a military coup. And then she was voted into Parliament, then she became Minister of Culture. Mm-hmm. Did you become a couple before you started working together, or did you become a couple through working together?
Both. She at a Cannes Festival in 1954 or 55, Melina came with a film representing Greece, a film called Stella, and I came representing France with Rififi. And we met there. And I admired her performance very much in Stella. That was the title of the film. And I was preparing another film called He Who Must Die, and which there's a part that I thought she would be perfect for. And I told her about that, and that's how our life began.
What was her image in Greek movies before Never on Sunday, in which she played a kind of earthy prostitute?
In Never on Sunday?
Yeah.
Yeah. She had made only that one film before. This film, Stella, was the first film she ever made.
Oh.
That's all she had. It was her first movie.
So you kind of discovered her in a way.
Well, the man who made Stella discovered her. But she was a very important star in the Greek theater.
Now, you've continued to live in Greece.
Mm-hmm.
What do you like about living in that country? I guess your family is there now.
No. My family is in Paris. But, you know, we see each other. My daughters are here with me now, right outside your studio door. You know, this dictatorship that you referred to lasted 7 years.
In Greece?
Yeah, it lasted 7 years. And for Melina to be cut away from Greece, which she passionately loved. She loved everything Greek. If you had a Greek name, she loved you. She was a nationalist, a jingoist, a chauvinist, ever, whatever came to Greeks, she loved. And for her to be away was very serious punishment. And when the junta fell, I happened to be in New York on the day it happened. Melina was in Paris, and she said, I'm going back tomorrow. Think of what you're going to do and let me know. And I had said to myself, now, I'm thinking of my work mostly. My Greek was practically non-existent, limited. And I had to decide quickly what I would do the rest of my life. But I knew what Greece meant to Melina. She had to be there. And I knew what she meant to me, so I had to be with her. And that was the decision. I went to live in Greece.
Well, Jules Dassin, thank you for talking with us. Thank you for visiting New York.
Enjoy talking to you.
And I wish you the best.
Thank you.
Film director Jules Dassin, last week he flew to New York for a film retrospective featuring his late wife, Melina Mercouri. It runs at the Film Forum in Manhattan through October 18th. He will appear at the Harvard Film Archive October 11th, where they're doing a tribute to Mercouri and Dassin. I'm Terry Gross.